RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
It's time for the final political panel, a political agenda here at RCR for 2024. I want to welcome on to the panel this morning RCR's Marie Buskey. Morning, Marie.
Morning, Paul. How are you?
Good. I could have done with a foot soak.
Well, I knowing Dave as I do, I was just imagining the sort of phalange-based gesticulations that might have been going on through the glass at you.
I'm good with sign language now, I tell you that. Yeah, and the thing I was worried about is he might not have nailed the temperature exactly. Anyway, okay, RCR's Simon O'Connor. Hi, Simon.
Good morning from a rather glummy, gloomy Auckland. I mean, hoping it's better down there in the studio.
You just made me feel gloomy.
Oh, no.
And glummy.
Well, I'm trying to distract myself from thinking about your feet inside some Epsom salts. Oh, now Marie's showing me some imagery. Oh, this is terrible.
Oh, dear.
Beautiful blue sky there with Marie.
All right. Well, that's nice. That's Hawke's Bay, isn't it, for you, Marie?
Yeah, Napier.
Okay. You're boiling, aren't you, there? It's like 30 plus last few days.
We've had...
The climate emergency.
Yeah, I know. No one in the Bay's complaining, I can tell you that. It's been
kind of
fine weather and lots of degree temps in the 30s. We love that stuff here.
Rock on. And Glenn Inwood. Hi, Glenn.
Morning, Paul. How are you? Season's greetings.
Thank you. You had a late one last night.
It was a bit of a late one, but I'm up and about.
Yeah, look at you.
The last thing I need to do right now, Paul, is think of your feet.
Put that with the late night and whatever you were doing. Yeah, okay. Nice to have you guys. Okay, we got to start with this. Who wants to start on Candace Owens? Marie, you can start on Candace Owens.
Oh, well, I'm glad that finally sense had been seen. And I'd really love to know who was the genius that suddenly thought that not blocking Candace Owens was a good idea. I thought we were done with this after Southern and Molyneux. I really did. And I'm pleased that finally sense has been seen. And from what I understand, you'd probably know this more, Simon, that Chris Pink, I think, got involved, didn't he, with this and made sure that jobs were done appropriately. I'm sorry, you can't cherry pick who can and can't come into the country because you don't agree with their politics or potential opinions. And yes, I understand that there will be some in the Jewish community that won't be thrilled about her being here, but you know, the reality of it is don't attend. Just don't attend. If you're not interested in what she has to say, don't go.
Yeah. No, a good call by Chris Pink. I mean, he's a great free speech advocate, so he's actually holding to principle. I mean, there'll be a whole lot of other MPs as well, I'm sure, who have been advocating for this change. But it's absurd, really, that it's taken a ministerial intervention on this. She should have been allowed in. I mean, at the end of the day, she's not promoting an uprising or revolution. She's got some barking mad ideas, in my opinion, but she's allowed to come and speak. And all that's been achieved here, Paul, is her name is now well known, even better known across New Zealanders. What is it, the Streisand effect or something they call it?
Well, Glenn would have something to say about that because you know a lot about PR, Glenn. What would the value of PR and potential interest in sales be, the bump from what has happened here?
Oh, I think, Paul, it's done her the world of good for her shows when she gets here, absolutely. But this is common sense. And that decision to ban her, I think, is representative of people who work in the bureaucracy throughout the civil service, and a lot of these people, just some of the decisions they make are completely ridiculous. This is a free speech issue. It always has been. Sunlight is the best disinfectant on people's opinions. You get them out there and you debate them, and to block somebody coming in is, it's anathema to a free democratic society.
Simon, why would have they waited for the officials to move and not get ahead of it and say, okay, officials, we know she wants to come. Yeah, you're not going to be denying a visa, by the way. Can't you do that? I'm picking it that you can't do that.
No, you can. I mean, you can, of course. Of course you can, but it's not really the right and proper way to do it. And you know, had a minister tried to intervene too early, preempt it, it would have come out in OIAs, and then there would have been calls of, you know, basically fiddling with the system. So Yeah, they just had to wait. Personally, I would have liked them to have responded much quicker, but I suspect Minister Pink's just been following a process that if someone wants to try and review this, he can say, no, I took further advice, I considered it. And, but as Glenn said, it's just common sense. It's absolute common sense.
What would the water cooler talk at Immigration New Zealand be today, do you think?
We're all being so polite. We're all being so, well, actually, they might be all sitting there.
Will you be going there like, I can't believe this. This is, oh, God, and we look like fools. I mean, you just wonder how
hopefully,
they react.
Hopefully Chris Pink gave a few people at Immigration a good rack up.
Yeah.
Mm. And you would have thought, too, with the cuts in the public service, that you wouldn't want to be shining a light on yourself for making decisions that then get overturned. I mean, that wouldn't be good for future career prospects, one would have thought.
Last stand. Making their last stand, maybe. All right.
Perhaps they've already had the pink slip.
Yeah. Go, Simon.
So many of them are just captured, unfortunately. You know, this ideology that we talk about, however you want to describe it, cultural Marxism to woke, whatever it is deep. And again, it's ridiculous at one level that it requires a minister to intervene to allow someone to come into the country and talk.
Should there be some sort of corrective thinking training for these people? I mean, we can't have this, can we?
A reprogramming system.
With loud PA speakers right next to their ears, you know.
Oh, no, Paul, why don't we actually do... We should actually petition for compulsory listenership of RCR. Sit them in a room. And actually, yeah, and give them certain interviews that they have to listen to, and they've got to do, like, it's like penance, I guess. They've got to listen to so much each day.
Yeah.
Deprogramming.
And they have to come up to a threshold of being able to quote stuff from those things before they pass. Yeah, I got that. All right, 2024, race relations. They're worse at the end of 2024 than they were at the beginning of 2024. Are they? Who wants to start on that?
Yeah, they are. I think they are. I think this is, though, it's used as a stalking horse for Labor and the Greens and the Māori Party in politics. It is. I think race relations generally in New Zealand are, I think a lot of people see through the whole discussion around the treaty, and most people know that this treaty principles bill is not going any further. It is it was just a big beat up by Māori Party to recruit.
Mm.
But race relations, I think New Zealand, we have good race relations in New Zealand. We've just got a small minority of Māori activists who want to push it further and further and further. The ideal situation would be to end the Waitangi Tribunal, finish the settlement process, and then move on as a nation.
Mm. And then it doesn't help that you've got a media that likes to promulgate it because they want to have something to say, and it's an easy beat up on those that they don't like. So that, and you're right, Glenn, like I'm literally, as soon as I'm done here, I'm about to drive up the East Coast and go back home to see the family for the weekend. And I can tell you when I get there, most people up there in Gizzy, that they will just not be interested in us. They just want to get on with living and enjoying the sunshine and doing all of that stuff. And everyone rubs along just fine. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I do wonder, and one of the things that looking back across the year is that, you know, the octopus-like tentacles of a certain president of Te Pāti Māori have run very, very deep in many facets and corners of politics this year. And, you know, you've got the likes of Carl Lacaine turning around and doing an apology saying, oh, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have done a polling booth at Māiariwa Marae. That was a bit of a mistake. Well, what are you going to do about it, Carl?
That's the old begging for forgiveness later strategy.
You know, none of this soz, not soz. You know, I am waiting for something to sort of blow there, and because there's so many Svengali and Machiavellian-like things going on in the background, and the likes of the hīkoi and all of this unrest is what you see from it. And this disruption is being promulgated by a very, very, very small group of people for their own gain.
Yeah, I'd echo a lot of that. I mean, I think it you know, the ordinary New Zealander, if I could put it that way, I think the race relations are good. Doesn't matter if people are Māori, Filipino,
some of
Afghan,
my best friends are, ...
Well, I think, I think really most of us just get on with our lives. We're not running around worrying about many of the issues that, again, the woke try to force on us. But, you know, if you will, the media, the political class, the bureaucracy, they have created a worse racial situation. And I think that's coming through in some polls recently in terms of not just what people do and don't support in terms of the Treaty Principles Bill, but what was really clear is people are finding it too divisive and they just want it to go away. And that's a bit worrying, really, because as you might expect for someone like myself, the more important an issue is, the more conversation needs to be had, not running away from it. And that's unfortunately what we've got here in the Māori Party, as Marie and Glenn noted, very much activist. They are recruiting via these campaigns and the hikoi. But ironically are saying, we want to yell, scream, but no one else is allowed to have an opinion. And again, I think most Kiwis do see through that.
They're recruiting on something that is completely wrong and erroneous in their interpretation.
Well, that's the dangerous thing, isn't it, Glenn?
I don't agree with the Treaty Principles Bill on the basis that we don't want... there are no principles in the treaty, right? But moving forward, it's not going any further. I think National could have handled it a lot better. I think the Prime Minister could have handled it.
How could he have done that, Glenn?
Well, instead of standing at the podium and saying there's nothing in the bill that I like, wouldn't, as a Prime Minister, you expect to say something like, well, let's see what New Zealand says, right? Mm. Let's have the discussion about this. We shouldn't be afraid of it. But instead of this is a national, the National Party needs to find its place, and I think it wavers and it vacillates between, you know, what's politically correct or what it perceives as being politically correct and what isn't. And
after about a year, because he's had the job now a little over a year, he sort of throws off that head boy who got the job through a popularity contest and moves wherever the vibe of the school is, but doesn't actually lead anywhere. And the polls, I think, you know, you see ACT, who's picking off soft votes from National.
Which has been their strategy all along.
But it also, too, on the other side of the fence, Te Pāti Māori are picking off a lot of soft votes from Labour, too.
I was going to mention that.
And the Greens.
The polls. Did they have 7% Te Pāti Māori in one of the polls? And if that is...
Nine, yeah.
Okay. if that is a bump from recent activities, hikoi, etc., they know that the more they go hard, the more that they might pick up support. So we can expect, can't we, between now and the election, more of these things, and they'll probably get more intense as they employ that strategy to increase their vote, because it seems to work this time. It might just be a bump, I don't know. But
you're absolutely right, Paul.
It will get crazier and crazier. I mean, there's the implicit threats of violence are already there, and it's probably what I was badly articulating a bit earlier, is ultimately a lot of Kiwis are, in a sense, a bit afraid of that. It's almost like a corporate thug's veto came from the likes of the Radicals and the Māori Party. They're just going to bulldoze through these issues and silence people. Again, they're important issues. People are welcome to discuss them one way or another.
And as you said before, Simon, in terms of the critical social justice element of it, we've been groomed now for a number of years that if you've come from any of the particular minority or oppressed classes, of which the Māori Party, Te Pāti Māori, have actually embraced with both hands. They've been putting the mail buck into Māori for a while now and totally loving it. And you've got an entire group of people that have been groomed not to push back and do what I call the mumsy no and just go, oh, no, no. And a lot of the, you know, speaking to a lot of the people that I know, and Marty and I have talked to a number of, you know, queer and kaumātua, and a number of them are feeling really intimidated by these young activists. Yeah, and you just have to look at the conflicts like Ihimato is a classic example of this. There you had kui and kaumātua and senior members of a hapū who'd made an agreement and young activists that were happy about it, and look at the absolute, you know, shit show that turned into.
Shemozzle. Yeah.
Totally.
At this point, one of the things that always makes me laugh around all those young activists, particularly in the Māori community, is how they've appropriated, again, the thinking of a German philosopher being Marx. Why I say that is because they're always so big about culture and don't appropriate this and don't appropriate that. But those young ones at Ihimato aren't, I would argue, facilitated by culture. It's by a sort of a revolutionary political thought.
Mm.
And again, it's bullish, it's aggressive, and Kiwis don't like it.
No.
Look, this has been Māori Party strategy since the election. You know, 3 days after the election last year, they held a protest, and they're going to carry on with them and push New Zealand towards. They're going to push that activist, that extreme side of New Zealand out towards them. And National need to stand up to it, and they're not.
Oh, yeah, I got phoned with one of those polls, you know, because he was the cluster of them that came out the other week. And I was one of the people that they phoned, and they caught me after I'd had about two or three glasses of truth juice.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What did you say? What did you tell them?
Well, it's interesting the questions they asked. One of the questions they asked was, because you had the list of the political parties, who did I believe was the most racist?
Okay.
Was one of the questions, yeah.
That's a bit of a loaded question.
Oh, there's a lot of loaded questions. I spent a lot of time.
Who was the company? Who was the company?
It was Curia.
That's
who I got phoned by. Yeah, that's right. So I was, I sort of said, well, that's quite obvious. And the person on the phone's like, is it? Yes, think about it. And then if it was a question I didn't like, no, the framing of that question isn't good. The question should be framed like this. Have you got notes for your supervisor? Write this down. Yeah. Wow. I might have gotten my stuff taken off the list a little bit.
You're the polling respondent from hell.
Yeah, I finished it though. I mean, they should be happy. I went all the way.
The poor 18-year-old on $20 an hour is going, oh God, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
No, I don't. And then at the end, when they do the demographic questions, they sort of, what gender do you identify with? And I said, well, no, what sex I identify with? There's two options there. And I said, female. I said, but how many options, if I were to believe in gender, how many options could I have? I'm not allowed to answer that question.
I'm not allowed. As long as they don't get confused with the next set of calls they deal with, and that's like, bank inquiries or something, because it'll be a call centre, won't it? Something like that. All right. Did we in 2024 reach peak trans?
In this country or internationally?
Well, let's start here, but okay, internationally, bigger picture.
I can't answer that question, says
Paul. Yeah.
I don't know much about it.
I actually think we internationally we surpassed peak trans.
I mean, tipping point.
No, the tipping point has, I think, internationally happened probably 2 years ago. Here, it started. The tipping point here was Albert Park.
Yeah.
So those are the sort of two, and Albert Park also too internationally sort of sped things up. But you've had across the year the WPATH files leak and the CAS report, and those have both been quite monumental. And you've had now a number of international bodies and governments really take a look at all of this and reduce or halt treatment on minors. It's really starting to get some legs now in the United States. So we definitely have reached peak trans, but as dear leader once said, in New Zealand we like to do things a little differently. So here, I think there will be a little sting in the tail here. There's a lot of those activists who have gotten themselves exceptionally well-paid six-figure jobs in places like the Burnett Foundation and Inside Out, and
they're going to fight
Rainbow
like
Youth,
hell to keep.
And
that.
They're going to fight like hell to maintain it. And the I know that there's been lots of fanfare around the review of the RSE education.
Yeah.
That has just been announced. My concern was, though, is that they are going to take an expert body to look at the curriculum.
Yeah, who's that?
Who are the experts?
Yeah.
Who are the experts? Because if they're the likes of Dr. George Parker, who was involved in the Midwifery Council guidelines, yeah, I'd be running 1,000 miles in the opposite direction. So that is the key here. Who are the experts in this space that they're going to talk to? Is Ro Edge going to be on that panel? Because she should be.
Yeah, dead right on that RSE stuff. It's a win that it's been dropped. I think that was a New Zealand first pledge. Yep. So that's great. But was saying the other day, for me, it's one step forward, but potentially two steps back. Because, who's going to write this? And you're already seeing coming through some media, and they're basically voices for ERO, and these experts, in inverted commas, are, are accusing parents of being misinformation and abusive and potentially violent. In other words, parents who do know a little bit about creating children are wrong. We're going to leave it to a bunch of experts, in inverted commas.
What do they bloody well expect?
Mm. Do you know what was really interesting with that report too, Simon, was the kids, when they asked the kids, consent. So many of them felt that not enough education was based around consent. Now, that for me, as a woman, is actually quite terrifying, because consent at that age should be what you're concentrating on. The interpersonal relationships before you enter into, not the nuts and bolts of, you know, what you could possibly do, which is what they seem to be focusing on, but the actual relationship side of consent and the interaction between two parties. And then, and for the kids to come back and say that they felt that there wasn't enough there, that to me is like, that's a huge red flag. You need to actually pay attention to that.
Paul, I think you're right. Have we reached peak trans? Maybe, but only because, as Marie says, because of Posey Parker and people putting their feet on the throat of it all. And we need to keep our foot on the throat. You've still got a Ministry of Health that thinks puberty blockers are okay, despite the fact that I think the UK banned them this week.
Indefinitely. Indefinitely.
Mm. Indefinitely. And, you know, we still have, we have a Ministry of Health in denial over many things.
Fluoride.
Fluoride, their COVID response, all of it is, you know, and as Simon said, there is an ideology within the bureaucracy of you know, ignoring these sorts of things and what the public are thinking. So, no, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of work still to be done to push this back. You've still got, you know, what's coming out of that Burnett Foundation is extremely worrying. And you've got a Green Party member who worked for that organisation who is now in Parliament who is espousing many of these principles from these organisations.
Mind you, you've got a National Party guy who used to work for the Tavistock Clinic. So that, question for you, Glenn. New Zealand First, I think people know the position of New Zealand First in this area. And I referred to the bum that the Māori Party got earlier, Hikoi and all that. You'd expect that New Zealand First would be riding a bump on this as well, I would have thought.
You would hope so. And I think a lot of people who probably do follow New Zealand First can see how this is, the pushback has started to come from that. I mean, they took a very strong stand of it during the election last year and got ridiculed for it, right? Winston was, you know, this is not about, for National, this is not about men and, you know, toilets. This is not an election about use of toilets. Well, actually, yes, it is. You know, there's a lot of cultural issues out there that people are very concerned about. And they should get a bump. You know, and one of the best performing MPs, I think, in the Parliament this year must be Tania Unkevich. Mm. She has done an enormous amount of work on these sorts of issues, and she needs to, you know, she is a valuable asset to the New Zealand First Party.
Yeah, Tania's right. I absolutely second that. Absolutely great. I think just really, really quickly from my side, peak trans around the world for everything that Glenn and Marie have said. New Zealanders, we have this funny, we think we're different, and you're getting that here through the Ministry of Health and the supposed gender care experts. Oh, no, we're different. Like, no, we're not. So I think there will be a sting in the tail. There's certainly those delays. I would want the minister or ministry take a leaf out of Chris Pank's book and actually do something. We're talking about children. You know, this is the...
Yeah, what are they afraid of, Simon? I can never work this out. What are they afraid of? No one's going to... You know, everyone sees the sense of that.
Well, those activists are very, very loud, Paul, and a lot of them are entrenched in the framework of the Ministry of Health. As I said, there's a lot of people with a lot of big six-figure salaries that will do anything to protect those six-figure salaries. And, you know, they have KPIs that have been set that entrench all of this stuff. So they'll say, oh, no, but I'm working to my KPI and this is what I'm going to do. And they will do anything to keep their jobs.
I'm not liking NGOs.
Well, this isn't an NGO, Paul. This is our Ministry of Health.
Okay, but I'm thinking
and,
of those.
And you know how we talked about stuff with the vaccine in terms of doctors, of things you can and can't do and say? It's the same in the gender and trans space.
Well, what's inside out? That's not Ministry of Health, is it? They're probably funded by them, but that's a separate thing, isn't it?
They are funded by them.
They're funded by the ministry. But you've got, so you've got doctors now, doctors who will refer out anything gender-based as quick as they possibly can to somebody.
Because they don't want it.
Because they don't want to draw the attention of the medical council or a complaint from an activist parent or a child, because you go through exactly the same process if you're somebody that isn't on board with the COVID.
Well, that'd be a nightmare, wouldn't it?
Gender is exactly the same. These poor doctors have been horizontally policed into silence. Doctors, nurses, mental health workers, counsellors. So what they do is they shimmy these patients, these kids, a lot of them, into services that are all on board, and then they go down the conveyor belt. Now, this needs to stop. I have a real bugbear in terms of policing and censorship with the New Zealand Medical Council. If there's going to be a review, there has to be a review of every single governing professional medical body in this country, because they're complicit. Sorry,
here's a prediction.
I have to stop.
Here's a prediction. They're finished. Medium term, they're finished. All right, I've got to be conscious of time here. Let's go to the biggest story on the planet right now. It's got to be Trump, hey? Got to be Trump. Trump's win, right?
Well, he's the Times Man of the Year, I see.
Oh, they decided on that. But, I mean, you know, he dodges bullets. Everything was in that. It was the most entertaining show you could ever think of, right?
Donald Trump is the most powerful man on the planet right now.
Or Elon Musk.
And Elon, a close second.
Yeah. So it's been interesting.
You saw the European Union have a breakdown over Trump's election. But now they're starting to accept it for what it is. The reality is there. They're going to have to deal with it. You know, the whole world is, and it's good to see everyone, you know, move towards this direction, see what's happening.
And also, it's good to see the difference in him from 2016. Like in 2016, in that lame duck period, he sort of, lots of bombastic stuff, and you can see he was a bit stunned that he got the job. Now, I mean, he literally has hit the ground running. I mean, he's running American diplomacy from the sidelines, and while Joe's running around pardoning his son and pardoning his, you know, all these people, the biggest number of pardons ever in history overnight.
Guinness Book of Records.
Go Joe.
The thing about Trump is he looks so good. And people were, you know.
You like the orange hue.
Well, I don't know about the orange hue. That seems to vary, you know. That can be more orange some days than others. But, you know, the guy's got crystal clear eyes. I mean, I pay attention to these things. I look at at the footage and, you know, people were writing him off as like, you know, obese, junk food loving guy, gets 3 hours of sleep a night. But he must have something to be 78 performing like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite remarkable at his age. But look, he's got a strong team around him. I think, you know, he's learnt from last time. I think the shooting assassination attempt has had an effect on him as well. But ultimately, and what I think is good, he's going to shake up the American system. It's, some things we'll disagree with, but a lot of it is, you know, needed. And so this is good. So what Elon Musk and others are going to do is at Doge, you know, have a real look at what all these federal agencies are doing, what they're looking to do in health, of course, with RFK, education, the military. This is all good stuff. This is what is needed. And that will have a flow-on effect to here in New Zealand, because Trump ain't going to have any time for the sort of the weak, wussy politics that comes out of New Zealand.
Well, I wonder who, if we're talking about bureaucrats and their thinking and their ideologies, our part of Five Eyes, what sort of ideology exists there?
Four eyes and a blink.
Because weren't we helping out doing a little bit of spying back in the day for them against Trump pre-2016? That's what's been said. So I wonder where that leaves us, our security agencies.
You know, Western liberal nations are having to have a rethink about everything they're going through at the moment. And it's not only America. I think tearing through that bureaucracy in America is going to be a very difficult job for Elon Musk with his Department of Government Efficiency. And it's the same here in New Zealand, turning all of that around. You've seen our bureaucracies have been infiltrated, I will say. It might not be the right word, but with very left-wing Marxist communist thinking in very many ways these days. And you've seen that in America, I think. That's what the election was about. So.
There'll be a lot of lobbyists and bureaucrats in the United States that are bedwetting right now. And it's a delicious thing.
And it's going to have consequences down here. You just mentioned the intelligence. If I could broaden them in defence space. You know, New Zealand is cutting its defence budget. It's sinking ships voluntarily.
We do that pretty well.
Voluntarily.
Yeah, we're good at that.
Trump's going to demand a lot more. From not just New Zealand, but Australia and other countries. And so that's going to be a big issue for this government.
We can't afford it. We can't afford it, can we?
Well, he'll hit us with tariffs if we don't, is my pick. I mean, maybe he'll forget New Zealand exists, but, you know, Trump, that is, the administration is very clear that it wants to contain China and stabilise the Indo-Pacific, and they expect New Zealand to be part of that. So we're going to have to find the money, is really the answer.
You know what I reckon, Simon? Do we take a leaf of that out of that with Anthony Albanese, who's now just funded an NRL team in Papua New Guinea to stop the Chinese from doing things? So who knew? Footy could save the day.
There you go.
Soft diplomacy. Yeah, okay. Or we could get repurpose Peter Jackson to build fakes of military equipment. So it looks like we've got a lot of stuff, you know.
Winston Churchill didn't he?
Yeah, well, during
the Second World War.
And fooled the Germans.
Blow up tanks and planes to fool the Germans.
There you go. Yeah. You could put a few, they'll never move. they'll find that out pretty quick, you know, sitting there at Devonport, a few extra things that look like ships.
For your drones, Paul, that you were talking about this morning, it could be, you know, you could put all of those up for all those drones.
Yeah. Yeah, around. Just sort of make it look like we're doing our bit. They'd catch on to that pretty quick. Speaking of which, have any of you been following this drone swarm thing? I think it's worthy of mention because the Pentagon say it's not them. The US government says it's not them. They're saying that there's no evidence of an outside party or state doing it. And some of the physics of these things are defying sort of knowledge, current knowledge. What do you think's going on? Anyone got an opinion?
What's the drone swarm thing, Paul?
Oh, what's the drone? Yeah. He doesn't even know. Where have you been,
Glenn? I haven't really been following it.
Yeah, you're up too late.
I've seen some headlines about drones and Iran.
Well, drop. No, I tell you, it's big. Marie, have you been? You would have heard what I was saying this morning.
Yeah, I heard what you were saying this morning. Oh, look, someone will be responsible.
Someone, yeah. All right, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll skip over that one, shall we? All right, moving on to geopolitics. We probably should talk about Ukraine first because that's the long-running thing. But haven't the events in Syria, I mean, I was napping on that one, just been, mind-blowing. You want to talk about that? Go for it.
What the whole...
Mind-blowing. It all happened very quickly. And Assad must have known it was coming and he knew the end was there.
He made a deal, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but what does it mean?
Well, I mean, talk about jumping from the frying pan into the fire. So, I mean, not that the Assad regime was fantastic, but there were this new group. I mean, are they going to negotiate with the Russians and the Chinese or are they, or the Iranians rather, or are they going to turn into like...
Murder everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I just. But then I heard this morning. I can't remember whether it was you with Paul with Kit Knightley or it was something else. It was talking about the Syrians who are currently in the UK are now indicating that they would like to go back, and now that there are concerns in the UK because a lot of their medical force actually came out. Oh. Most of the Syrians, medically trained Syrians, landed in the UK, and they have been essentially propping up the NHS for the last 5 or 6 years, but they'd like to go back and help rebuild a system back in Damascus, and they're now worried that there's going to be an exodus, and they're now starting to talk about repatriations and stuff of those that fled to go back and help rebuild Syria.
If jihadi becomes popular, there are lots of fighting age men who might be interested in joining that infused all the way through all these countries now. That's a bit of a sobering. Well, one thought, of
the Syrian situation, I don't know. It is very confusing. It seems to me that you're on the one hand, you've got America wanting the Assad regime to fall, in which it has. And we're helping the rebels, if we want to call them that. But does Aleppo change its spots? It's still ISIS. It's still Al Qaeda. And as much as, you know, you've seen all the videos over the last week of just executions occurring throughout Syria, in the middle of the street, people being dragged, you know, away, shot at point blank range, and ISIS, you know, Aleppo, does Aleppo change its spots? Mm. I saw an article in the UK Daily Telegraph the other day where it was talking about diversity, that this new regime was going to be, you know, respect diversity. Really? Well, let's just see what happens.
You know that's a paid-for comment.
Probably.
Of course. It's like, you know, it's an extra $1,000 for saying that. Probably they're being paid $1,500 a month, apparently. The Syrian soldiers are on $50 a month, so you can see why they ran away.
Yeah, the Syria question's not over. I mean, look, it's come about for a whole lot of reasons. I mean, Assad was god-awful, brutal. But, you know, what's been happening with Israel, its undermining of Hezbollah and Iran, Russia focused on Ukraine, weakened Syria. But, you know, these guys who have taken over are a desperate bunch of tribal groups, different agendas, and strongly Islamic. And they are clear they want to impose Sharia law. And, you know, a lot in mainstream media seem to think that Assad's regime gone is now going to usher in a wonderful time of prosperity and liberal democracy. I don't think you're going to see that. You're already seeing the brutal repercussions. I suspect you'll end up with a civil war like we saw in Libya. And we'll find out that this new leader, I've forgotten his name, but this is going to be more like Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And I know that's all pretty dark. Yeah, but it's, I don't think this is the glorious freeing moment that people, particularly in the Western liberal media, think it is.
No, I was just about to say that, Simon. This is Afghanistan 2.0. And you're going to have a highly regressive Shia Muslim regime, and it'll potentially even be worse than what they had before. As I said, frying pan into the fire.
You said,
I think, you know, Israel did the right thing, I think, moving into that part of Syria around past the Golan Heights to protect itself, because they must be nervous about what's coming. Yeah.
Well, they might be paying one of the sides. People are saying that. In terms of the brutality of Assad, you mentioned that just before, Simon. Well, he's an ophthalmologist, apparently, and he's English educated, so... And he was thrown into that after his brutish father died. But it seems that that's the only way you can run these countries. You have to be brutal, otherwise they fly out of control.
Are there any successful Shia Muslim democracies in the world at the moment, Simon?
This is a really good question. I'd have to go away and think about it. I mean, it's not Shia Muslim. I mean, obviously Indonesia's a relatively stable country, but in the Middle East, no. I mean,
I'm talking Middle East.
Tribal politics. It's that tribal politics, you know, which is a warning to New Zealand. Let's not overeat this, but, you know, tribalism is what leads to major, major problems. It's one of the great wins of Western liberal democracy that we're able to create systems that step above that. And you're seeing the opposite in Syria. I mean, gosh, if you're a Christian in Syria, get out now.
Yeah. They're trying to, but apparently they're being intercepted at the border. So it's a hellscape. All right, to Ukraine, it looks like the little green goblins' days are numbered, wouldn't you say? Zelensky?
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely, Paul. Absolutely. And it's a good thing. It needs to come to an end. Yeah.
Well, why does Winston always side with Ukraine then?
You don't overturn 80 years of military alliances since World War II overnight. And we are, whether we like it or not, we are bound to the United States and the UK and Australia. They are our friends. They are our allies.
But what if they're doing really bad, wrong things and it's a threat to us if we go thermonuclear? We don't want to be on a target list, right?
I don't think we have any choice in any of that, Paul, myself.
Okay, well, that solves that. Yeah,
we are siding with the US. The US is where our alliances lay. And
But we're supporting hundreds of thousands of deaths, Glenn, and we've given them $150 million, and where that could have been for hospitals.
I'm not saying I agree with it, Paul. I'm just saying that it's a practical, you know, it's pragmatism on where we are, and I think. You know, Ukraine, the US, the current Biden administration is a threat to global security at the moment. What it is doing with the ATACMS going into Russia, the UK sending the storm shadows into Russia, and you've seen what Russia did with the Oreshnik Hazel missile.
Hazelnut, named after the hazelnut tree.
And it's just escalating. It needs to be brought down a notch. Hopefully, the new administration will look at this sensibly, but I'm not sure they will. No. But what you are looking at over time, I think, will be a loss of US hegemony, and we're going to move to a multipolar world.
Right.
And things will be changed. And that will change us as well.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I think the Trump administration will facilitate it to an end. I mean, partly it'll just be basically you're going to give up some land, but the attacks will stop it. It's actually what word Glenn just used. It's pragmatism. I mean, both sides are exhausted. It's a meat grinder. We've talked about it before. It's just an absolute meat grinder.
Russia's not exhausted, Simon. Russia's got way more where that came from.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's not saying that they're running out. Ukraine is... But I think it's also fair to say that Russia's military has been found very wanting. They are struggling. They can keep going, but they will bring it to an end. That's my pick.
Well, that missile, that the hazelnut missile, the what is it, the Oreshnik, that that got attention.
Yeah, it's the hypersonics, isn't it, Glenn? Is that the...
I think it travels at Mach 10. So this
Mach
thing is going
10.
Between 2.5 and 3 kilometres a second.
Yeah. Think about the energy in that, the kinetic energy.
What Russia is saying is that it's unable to be shot down. You cannot intercept it. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. We don't know what America has secretly hidden away there to stop that.
But well, that's what they're flying over New Jersey at the moment, their secret weapons. They're just giving us a little look. That's what's going on. Hey. I'm being told we're running out of time. Thank you, Dave, doing the helicopter sign language. I want to go out on this COVID phase two. Response to COVID phase one, we had a week of it. Now this is the handle has cranked on phase two. Next year is going to be big. Some comments on that before we're done. Marie, you can go first.
I'm looking forward to phase two. I hope some courage muscles are found. And there are people within that inquiry who are not afraid to actually verbalise what so many of us know is the truth. That's what I've got to say about that.
Glenn, you must have a comment because this is New Zealand first. This is
it was one of their major policies during the election last year. I think the expanded terms of reference will allow New Zealand to explore in greater depth the previous government's COVID response, and that's a good thing. As you said, Paul, some of my best friends are, well, cookers. And so they're going to, you know, have an opportunity to talk about vaccine harm, vaccine safety, talk about the full on with the lockdowns again. All of that can be explored in greater depth than the whitewash that Labour tried to instigate on the country.
Simon, if there's truth to be, you know, swallowed, digested by people who may not have realised... let's see what happens. Will we cope? Will we find a way through? Because it could be a few heads exploding at the end of this process.
I'm a little concerned, actually, because the way that the first COVID report was handled, it's sort of being buried or pushed aside. The country doesn't seem prepared. Certainly the politicos, media, health professionals aren't prepared to really discuss it. So that, for me, is a little bit of an amber or not quite a red light. So I think it's great that we've got this phase two. I think it's really important that people speak into it. But when I look at how Blakely's report was handled, so that's not a reflection on him per se, but how it was put out, the media dealt with it for a day or two, politicians barely talked about it, and it's just passed on. So I worry about that, that when number two comes out, there'll be discussion from some, but actually the people who need to address it, so I'm very inarticulate this morning, I apologise, but those who really should be confronted by it will avoid it.
Right. Mm.
Sorry, that's very downer, isn't it? I do apologise to the listeners.
Really? Simon? Come on.
Nearly Let's Christmas. Go back to Syria. Let's go to something more exciting.
Something more positive. Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank Marie Buskey for coming in this morning, last panel of the year. Thank you, Marie, and for everything you do.
Oh, thank you. And everything you do too, Paul and Simon, because, you know, it's been a big year.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's... I'm feeling really hopeful for 2025.
Opium.
I'm feeling super, super hopeful. Yeah, well, there is change in the air, and I've been working in this culture space for 6 years now.
Oh, so you can feel it.
I can feel it in my water, Paul. I'm feeling good.
Shall I play in the air tonight? All right. And Glenn, you've had a great year too. I know that.
It's been a hard year, though, Paul. You know, there's a lot that's been going on. It's been a good year. Let's bring on 25 and let's see what happens. But
all right.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And have a great holiday new year, everybody.
Cheers. Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.